Do you know how once you become aware of something, you notice it everywhere? I got a plug-in hybrid Prius about a year ago. Okay, yes, I'm one of those Prius drivers. Well, before the dealer showed it to me, I wasn't even aware that there was such a thing. But now I see cars just like mine all the time. You may have noticed that the pandemic has put a spotlight on things that you weren't as aware of before, and it's challenging old parenting styles. Today, we're going to explore current challenges and new ways of communicating with our kids. This is LD Expert Live. My parents never had parenting issues around technology other than TV. Today is a totally different ballgame. My guest, Dr. Rajeen Mouradian, is going to talk about important issues facing parents today, including how to create boundaries around video games and technology, better ways of communicating with today's children and teens, what students with learning and attention challenges need, and how to take advantage of the pandemic to make needed changes. Welcome to the LD Expert Podcast, your place for answers and solutions for dyslexia, learning, and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers, and author of a brand new book, Take the Stone Out of the Shoe, a must-have guide to understanding, supporting, and correcting dyslexia, learning, and attention challenges. This book will help you understand why some bright children and teens have more difficulty than expected in school. It provides simple, practical tools for supporting struggling students at home and in the classroom. Most importantly, it presents real solutions and the science behind them. We're talking today about parenting in the 21st century. I am delighted to welcome our guest, Dr. Rajeen Mouradian, back to our show. Dr. Mouradian is a licensed clinical psychologist, author, speaker, consultant, and mental health advocate. In her clinical practice, Dr. Mouradian works with children, adolescents, adults, and families who present with a wide range of emotional, behavioral, and adjustment problems, such as depression, anxiety, relationship issues, executive functioning, and ADHD. She is also the mom of three children who really understands the daily challenges of being a parent and the stressors associated with juggling a career and family life. Welcome back, Dr. Mouradian.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for having me again.
It is just great to have you back, and especially with this topic. Of course, you know, I basically just told our viewers that you would solve all their 21st century parenting challenges. So are you ready for that?
Oh gosh, that's a tall order. We will definitely try.
Well, I want to start with an issue that was a concern before the pandemic and has become an even bigger issue now, video games. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about what video games do in the brain and how that impacts our kids.
Yes. So I wanted to touch upon maybe just like some research that was recently done. It was like by Mark Paulus. And what they had found is that the video games really impacted the structure of the brain and the activity of the brain. And they did find actually structural changes in the brain and in the functionality. So I think that was really interesting as I was also looking into what are some new advances and research out there, as this has been such a common topic for years, but even more so now. So one of the things that I'm just noticing just in general in my practice and as a parent and also what other parents are reporting are impacts on attention. Irritability. Kids are becoming more aggressive once they come off the game. So really, you know, noticing that there's such a huge increase just in the aggressive behavior, which makes a lot of sense as, you know, one of the most common played games are usually, I mean, there's Fortnite and there's so many other ones that they're playing that can have some violence in it. And you will see them kind of tapping at the screen. And, you know, there's so much aggressive play in terms of competing and winning. And so I think that also plays a role into how they feel once they're detached and they come off the game and how they function during the day after that.
Mm-hmm. And I've read that can even be kind of like similar to what to soldiers, you know, that aggression and irritability.
Yeah. So it reminds me a little bit of some desensitization that tends to happen where, you know, if you're playing hours on end, the same type of repetitive, aggressive type behavior, whether it's shooting, whether it's, I mean, more obviously the more aggressive games versus the calmer games, we are noticing definitely an increase in aggression, a desensitization to the impulse, right? That is all managed through the frontal lobe. And they just don't have that impulse control as regulated. That's what I'm noticing.
Mm-hmm. You know, many parents call you and they call us at STOA Learning Centers about their child or teen's poor executive function. Executive function is developmental and it's a process that develops well into the 20s. So, you know, obviously video games can't get all the blame, but executive functions are frontal lobe functions. And if the frontal lobe, you know, as you said, is getting turned off or desensitized, then we are going to see a lack of tact or poor self-management and impulse control.
Yes, that's a very good point. And also, what I'm also noticing is the patience level. They don't have as much patience as they used to. But again, I think the good news is, and I'm sure we'll go over that, is how much do we regulate that piece? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't stay forever. We don't want to frighten anyone. But just for parents and caregivers and teachers and just creating this conversation about what's healthy and, you know, how to moderate and regulate it. But in terms of the executive functioning, when it comes to doing work or homework, yes, the attention span is much shorter. They're more frustrated. So imagine if they have to attend now to Zoom. And that's another thing is during this pandemic, we are on Zoom. So we're seeing screen fatigue, Zoom fatigue. I had a friend who works in the medical field had mentioned, she works with children, that she had noticed vision issues where they were losing colors in the eyes. And
wow.
And even seizures we've heard of in certain children. Also, I don't know if you ever noticed on video games, it will state a disclaimer in terms of be cautious, this video game may cause seizures. So in some children, if they are predisposed, that could occur. So it's just something to be mindful of as, you know, we impose rules and boundaries around what that looks like. And obviously it is a personal decision for parents on how they deal with that.
And, you know, obviously devices are a part of our world now, and especially now because so many kids are doing school online. And so if we just recognize it really does impact our brain. And so we just want to have a little balance there, you know, take some time to step outside and look bigger than just, you know, focusing in on the screen. But also being, you know, being aware and educating our kids about, you know, the amount of time, you know, we're not regulating the amount of time they spend on their video games just because we're mean old parents, but because it really, you know, their brain needs a little bit of balance. So, you know, it is interesting. When I started the Learning Center, children were spending much more time outside, moving their bodies and engaging their imaginations, and they were generally more regulated. The big questions then were how much TV time is okay and is Sesame Street really good for kids? Well, since that time, we've seen a real change in the concerns that parents have around their students' learning challenges. we're seeing much more concern about poor regulation, attention challenges, and anxiety. And, you know, I'm sure there is some correlation with the amount of time spent on screens and video games. And I think you were mentioning that you even had kind of checked in with friends and neighbors and patients to find out their experience.
Yes. I was asking actually just some questions. How are you guys doing? How are you feeling? What are your rules around the video games? Are you noticing an increase in aggression or irritability? And how have you been handling it? And it's so interesting as I look through all the responses, everyone felt the same thing. And the results were, yes, more aggression, more irritability, just really having a hard time getting the kids off the video games, even though they did put some restrictions. And it, at the end of the day, just became this battle. And we don't want the battle, right? We want them to, you know, we want to come together to a consensus. And that goes into the communication piece and giving kids control. At the end of the day, it's them making that decision. And like you said, I love what you said, is them coming up and understanding, well, I know you don't like the boundaries and the rules. And that's a fact. Every time we do put a boundary, a rule, or a structure, I say this to my kids all the time. I know you're angry and you're upset or you don't like what I just said, but that's just mommy putting a boundary or a structure or, you know, saying something that you don't agree with, and that's okay. And you can tell me why you don't agree with it. And then we kind of create that conversation, but we're able to move forward. And I think that's what's really important, is that parents, you know, be consistent and stick with what they feel. Based on the decision that they made.
So let's talk about that a little bit more. I mean, how do parents create boundaries around video games and screen time? I mean, we obviously can't avoid it in our world, and really we don't want to. I mean, there's a lot of information that we get. There are social connections, which we, you know, our kids really need, we all need. So what advice do you have for parents as they try to create boundaries?
Yes. So I think the first part is you have the video game piece, and then we have kids on social media. And so those two different parts. So let's start first with the video games. I think, like you mentioned, kids before the pandemic were outside, they were playing, they were more regulated. They didn't really have time to play. A lot of parents that I know, there were just no video games Monday through Friday. They were just too busy, whether it was with homework or activities. Now, during the pandemic, we have removed, right, all social interaction. So they're not in school. They're not seeing their friends. They're not getting together as they used to. There's no activities. So that's an important part to keep in mind. And so what we're left with are kids who, what I've been seeing just as of late, is withdrawn, maybe anxious, depression, etc. So now we tackle the issue of video games. And parents have kind of changed the rules and bent the rules. And that's all fine. And I think there's a positive part of it, which I think, well, when we think about their mental health is number one. And part of the mental health is them connecting with their peers and enjoying with them. And then when you see them playing, they're actually, yes, there's a negative side of it, but they're actually interacting, they're talking, they're conversing. And I think that's really healthy. So it's kind of like choosing what are the options that we have now? So now we're left with the timing, right? So we know that there's all these benefits. However, there's all the negatives, which are the timing. How many hours are you on video games?
Right.
And when you look at the timing, from what I've asked, I'm talking about 5 hours, 6 hours. I mean, I remember last summer clients playing pre-pandemic, sorry, the summer before. I had one kid saying he would lock himself in the room from 9 a.m. all the way to 5 p.m. It's a long time. Draw the curtains and just sit there and play. So that, to me, well, obviously we know those are concerns. So what do we do? I think it's important, and it's not too late, even if you have imposed, you know, even if you have some rules and boundaries right now, it's not too late to still have this conversation, even if your child is playing 5 to 6 hours, because there is that struggle. 100%, they are going to be upset. They will be irritable and they will throw a tantrum. They're not going to be happy with any changes happening around their time.
Right.
What I have found useful, and I really, you know, and then this Jill and I, we were talking about this, is I sat down, for example, my son, I sat down with him and we really talked just in form of a question. How many hours are you playing online? Now, you got to keep in mind that kids don't have time concept. So he'll joke and say, oh, I was playing 10 hours. I was playing. Well, he was never playing 10 hours, but in his mind, that's how much time he thought he was playing. So that tells me that that's a long time, even if it was 3 hours. So we came up with a solution where he ended up deciding his time frame. So we kind of came down to 2 hours and chunking out the 2 hours, 1 hour at a time, and deciding what time that would be during the day for him. I used to have even restrictions. There are restrictions that parents can place in terms of when the video games go off and it's just manual, like programs like, you know, it's a wireless program we have at home, for example, it's called Eero, and you just turn it off from your phone. However, they get very, not just him, I had asked multiple people about this. Kids get really frustrated when the game just turns off. And the parent just turned it off and then they're in the middle of something or they were in the middle of talking to someone. So that creates a lot of anxiety. So how do we appease that is even like before is giving them a time frame. Hey, you're 10 minutes. You have 10 more minutes on there. I expect you to get off. How does that sound to you? And then most likely what I've noticed even with this technique, it's been working really well because kids at the end of the day want to please you. They want to be compliant. And I think that when we go into the explanation and the why, there's more of an understanding. Now, I'm not saying all kids are going to be okay with that, but at least it is a strategy that a parent can try.
You know, I remember when you and I were talking about this, and you kind of alluded to this, you really talked to your son about your opinion about how things needed to be. And that's where we can do some of that education, you know, about as a parent, I have to help you grow and protect your brain. And so too much time on video games is going to hurt your brain. So I can't let that happen, but I know it's important to you and you gave him the opportunity to share why it was important to him and validated that, you know, and I think that is the first place we have to start with problem solving like this. If our kids just feel like we're going to be the power, we're going to hide the, you know, the devices, or we're going to shut off video games, you know, you're going to get all kinds of rebellion. But if we sit down and we start to problem solve it together and validate each side, you know, and talk about the why, I really find at the Learning Center, no matter what we're doing with kids, if we talk about why, and I love to talk about to kids about what's happening in their brain, you know, but we talk about why we're doing this, they're much more willing to do just about anything, you know, even if it's something that's kind of challenging. So I think that kind of dialogue gives them some power. And then, in terms of shutting off, you know, it's true. You know, I don't play video games. And so, you know, it would be like, okay, time to shut it off. Bam. But they're probably right in the middle of a very important move or something. So, you know, giving a little, you know, okay, 10 minutes, you know, wrap it up is, you know, a positive thing.
Yes, I even remember pre-pandemic, a lot of clients saying things when I would ask something like, what would you like your parent to do differently? Teens would say, well, I would like my parent not to just shut off my computer, or I would like, what would you like them to do? I would like them to give me a 10-minute alert or signal so that, and again, if you look at what that really means, It's just them having the control to turn it off. So I found that really helpful, even with my kids, is when we decide on time frames. Well, what is your plan tonight? What is your plan on in terms of what time are you going to go to bed? What is your plan? Obviously, as a parent, you have already created that structure. So if your time is 10, it's 10. If it's 9, it's 9. But it's just about gently nudging them and starting again the conversation about, okay, well, it's about 8 o'clock. If you want to be in bed by 10, what do you think you need to do? So there's a lot of questioning. And I think that when kids, like you said, when they start speaking and sharing their opinion, they feel in control and they're more likely to do it. It reminds me of like a math problem. Well, you tell me now how to do this. Can you teach me? Because I'm not sure how to do that problem. And it kind of has the same analogy, and it works because at the end of the day, kids want to please. They want to feel empowered. They want to be able to make their own decisions. And above all, they want independence. And independence is part of teaching them how to make decisions and regulate their emotions. And for parents, I always say, don't get worried of that tantrum. That's okay. They'll forget it. I think it's all about not reacting to their tantrum and just recognizing, I can see you're upset right now. I could see that what I said made you frustrated. I'm going to let you, you know, take a few moments and then I'll come back and check with you. And I think, you know, you're leaving, but you're not giving them a sense of abandonment, but you're also telling them, I'm not going to give you negative attention and feed into the tantrum right now or whatever they're going through that makes them dysregulated in that moment.
Right. And once they're in that state, they're not in their rational brain anyway. So nothing is going to get solved until they settle down. You know, you said something that I just think is so important, and it's just such a slight shift in how we do things. You know, we're used to telling our kids what they need to do, or it's time to do this, or go do this, and revisiting it by asking the question, oh, well, you know, if you're going to be in bed by 10, what are your plans between now and then? Or what you're doing is you're allowing them actually to start to use their own executive function. You're giving them exercise in building their own executive function to start to think through, oh, wait, my bedtime's at 10. I want to do these things first. You know, that's what we do in our adult brains, and that's developing in kids. And so giving them a little bit of freedom there to do that is really a great thing. I will say, oh, go ahead, Regine.
I was going to mention, as you're talking, it reminds me a lot. We talk about executive functioning is what we see a lot too, especially now on Zoom, is, well, why aren't you doing so well in that class? What's happening? What do you think is happening? And they'll tell you. And a lot of the times they'll say, missing assignments, I'm not turning things in, I'm forgetting, or I didn't do it, or it was too much. And I think just this exercise, like you were describing, is so helpful because it really helps them plan out. And that's what executive functioning is. You being able to organize yourself and plan out your day and what you're going to do, so we don't, you know, experience the big word, right? I call it procrastination.
Right.
And, you know, just enjoying yourself more, having more time for you, and just getting the other things out of the way. Because then it's just anxiety all day long that they feel of what I need to get done. So that's another power of the questioning that really helps in helping them decide and make those decisions. But I want to tell parents that it's not that we're letting them do whatever they want. This is not what this is about. This is about, you have already created the rules in terms of, well, we already agreed on 10 o'clock, or we already agreed on 2 hours of video games. We already talked about that. We agreed on that. So now it's up to them to kind of divide it up during the day. And we just have that back and forth conversation. So it's, I don't want anyone to be in the, under the impression it's, oh, my kid can play 5 hours. I should let him play 5 hours. So I always go with a 2 hour, 2 to 3 hour, even 3 is pushing it limit. And think about some other ways that you can keep your child busy. I've seen a lot of parents do baking, taking them outside, or just distracting them, or, oh, we're going to go do this right now. So that's one way I get my son off. Like, oh, we're going to go do this right now. Are you ready? I'm waiting for you. And, oh, he's like, okay, I got to go. So any way we can distract once that time limit is up.
You know, this kind of collaborative questioning, kind of problem solving that we're talking about, communication that we're talking about with our kids, you know, it feels like, well, that's really going to take a lot of time. And it does take time. And when you're exhausted, it's so hard to take the time and have the patience and use that calm, nonchalant voice, but it's so worth it in the long run. It can just create a whole different feel in the household. And you know, going back to the brain, I mean, it just has a very positive impact on the brain too. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stowell here with clinical psychologist, Dr. Regine Maradian, talking about key parenting issues for today. So we've been talking about some different ways to communicate with our kids. What thoughts do you have about communicating with our students who are struggling with learning or attention about what they need and what they don't?
So I think we go back to, again, creating, right, a form of structure for our kids, and like going back to this, that little form that I showed, and you can find that anywhere. They have it on Amazon, just different forms. It doesn't have to be exactly the same one, but just in terms of a schedule, a paper schedule. I think that the kids who are now struggling with learning and attention, I think it's really about doing these little check-ins throughout the day. It's kind of like, and I'm curious also to see how you're doing it at your center, because it is the same method where we're checking in. How are you doing? Maybe it's per the hour, but also at the same time, giving them somewhat of that independence. I always say, let's allow them to succeed instead of us parents being constantly on them, and let's give them a little bit of that independence. Because I feel like when they feel that they have the independence, they detach from the diagnosis, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much mental health stigma that kids feel. Oh, I have anxiety. Oh, I have ADHD. I don't like this. I want to get rid of this. I want to be normal. This is all I hear. And, you know, when you give them that independence, and try it out for a week. And independence can look like, well, let's do this schedule. I'll give it to you. And maybe I'll check in with you only one time at the end of the day at 5 o'clock and see if everything, you tell me, what did you struggle with? And we can look together at what was turned in. I just told this to a client yesterday. I said, this is not that you can't be trusted that you didn't turn it in. I am sure you turned it in. But sometimes when there's too much to do, we often miss things. It happens. We're human. And I think when we normalize that, as we adults can make errors and mistakes, it's natural. It normalizes it for them. Because remember, kids feel everything in terms of, you know, in that moment, it just stays like an imprint, like a trauma. This is never going to end. Whereas we as adults can kind of detach from that and say, okay, I'll just do better next time. But in kids' minds, it feels so intense, right? That failure or that assignment they didn't turn in, or they got scolded by the teacher, or something had occurred that day. And I think now also with grades being so visible in some classes, that causes also more stress on kids. So I'm a really big advocate on, you know, let's detach from the label piece, and because you are not your anxiety, you are not your learning disability, you are not your ADHD. You are you, and what makes you unique and good and special in terms of your talent and what you can provide. So I think when we reframe it that way, they feel better, they feel stronger, and you know, sometimes you can even give the learning disability a nickname. Oh, there it is, it's popping up again, or, you know, and just having fun with it. And I always attribute it, it's a weakness that you have. This is your weakness. I have my weaknesses too. And I think when the parent steps back and takes on that stance, or even ask the kid, what do you think mommy's weakness is? Or what do you think I struggle with? Because we all struggle with something. So that's the normalization part that I think we need to do more of now more than ever and take this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, dialoguing with them a little bit about what they feel like they need from us. You know, kids are amazing, and I think we do tend to underestimate them. As parents, you know, we just want so badly to protect them and help them, and we feel like we're not doing our job if we can't do it. But sometimes in our effort to keep them from failing or to make sure that they're not struggling, we keep them from gaining resilience and independence. And that's not to say with our kids who are really struggling that we don't give them any help, but really dialoguing together about, you know, what pieces of it they really can do, and allowing them to do that and setting, you know, as you said, a check-in time where we can come back and check, but allowing them to work on it themselves and getting their feedback about, you know, what pieces they would like support in and what they feel like, yep, I got this. Because they feel so much better about themselves when they do know they've got it. They can do some of it themselves. Go ahead.
No, I was going to mention, as you were talking about that, is the discussion pieces. You know, when you step back, and most kids will say, I just want you to listen. I don't need your feedback. I don't want to lecture. I just want to hear. I just want to talk. And some kids will express that and some won't. So I think it's just automatically to assume that that's what kids need. And just starting with that active listening piece could be helpful too.
You know, back in September, on September 22nd, our guest on LD Expert was Michaela Caliendo. She is a delightful 16-year-old with ADD. And really, if you haven't watched the episode, you should. She gave really good advice for students, parents, and teachers from the perspective of someone living with ADD. And she and her mom obviously had a really good relationship, but she said, I hate it when my mom says, do your chores. She says, I already knew I had to do my chores, so now that you told me, it makes me angry and I don't want to do them anymore. And she said, ask me something like, how are your chores going? Or how would you like me to remind you what the steps were? We want to empower our kids. And sometimes it's just that really slight shift in our language that will do that.
Yes, it is so powerful, Jill. It is such a powerful statement when you put it back on them, and you will miraculously see that room cleaned. You will miraculously see things picked up. I mean, just by shifting that one statement, right? Or how's it going? Do you need any help on this? Or, you know, what is your plan today? And versus telling them, I think when you tell them, there's this innate feel of, I'm just not going to do it. Don't feel like doing it just because you told me. And I also, adults feel that too with their adult parents, mm-hmm. right? I'm like, oh, I'm not a kid anymore. You don't have to tell me to do X, Y, or Z. So we have to assume that also kids feel that same way because they've expressed it, definitely.
Right. You know, we've kind of mentioned this, but one of the very special parenting challenges of the 21st century is this pandemic, for sure. But you could look at it kind of like a reboot. The pandemic has stopped some of the noise and brought some things to our attention. So, Dr. Mouradian, before we wrap up, I know there are some very real frustrations for people around this pandemic, but to end on a positive note, how would you encourage people to look at it? Oh, and we've lost you. There you are.
Oh, as I was thinking about this question, it kind of reminds me of how we look also at people. If I'm talking to someone that I just met or even a friend, and if they say something that maybe bothers me a little bit or, you know, hits the wrong tone, etc., instead of looking at it, oh, they meant this or they meant that, or look at it from a positive stance. Think about everything that person has to say comes with a positive intent. And I think that will also change your perspective on how you feel about others and how we approach others. And we can also teach our kids the same thing. Well, she didn't mean that. Look at it from a positive point of view. Now, when we go into this, it's the same thing. It's looking at all the positive things that have come out, even if it's a couple or three. And the top things I'm thinking about is how much time we are spending together right now. And again, just focusing on the positive part, which is, wow, we weren't able to do this before, but now we are able to do this, for example. So it could be, we weren't able to have dinner every night. Now we are. We weren't able to go for a walk before. Now we are. We weren't able to just pick up and leave on a Tuesday to Wednesday and just go to the beach. Now we can. So I think it's just about stepping back and looking at the bonding that can occur, you know, and the things that you can do. And again, I go back to my list making and writing down a list of all the things that you still want to do. And that could be, you know, board games. It could be, what are the fun things that we can do together that we weren't able to do before? And I think it's just stepping back and having a reflection and even sitting down as a family and saying, wow, I just was thinking about this. Where were we at this time last year and today? And what were we not able to do? Do you remember how I was just running around and driving you everywhere or taking you to all these activities or where we didn't have that time to us or just, you know, just to open the door and go for a walk because you were so busy doing other things? So I think that that's really important. It's so easy to focus on the negative in any situation. But when you try to look in the good in people, when you try to look in the good in things, suddenly everything just seems to open up for you in terms of your mood and how you feel. And also, it is a week of being grateful and thinking about this week, just as you're sitting around Thanksgiving table. And I'm, you know, this is something we do a lot, is what are you grateful for? And that's such a big word. I think it means so much now more than ever, is what are we grateful for right now in this moment?
Well, thank you, Dr. Mouradian, for sharing your expertise and insight. I always love having you on the show. You have so much practical information and, you know, you're living it as a parent also. So I think that adds a lot. I also want to say congratulations on publishing your new book during the pandemic. The book kind of goes with some of what you were talking about with balancing the negatives with the positives. It's called Frankie and the Worry Bees, and it is a delightful book to give parents and kids of any age a way to talk about and handle stress. And it was written in the pandemic, so it's very, very relevant. Dr. Mouradian practices in Glendale and Beverly Hills, California and surrounding areas. Be sure and check out her website and look for her new book, Frankie and the Worry Bees, on Amazon. Thank you again, Dr. Mouradian.